It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Head of the pack, all the way in, slam dunk. Wow.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now with Bert Ramin on ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
It's hour number two on a Friday edition of Overtime. It's time to beat up your neighbor in the nicest way possible. And we got one fella on the line, Gino, who is tried and true. He's knocked out many of Sioux Empire natives on the air here. A tried and true veteran going up against Matt on the High Noon Showdown, brought to you by the all-new Uncle Ed Specialty Meats. Up for grabs today, the usual Uncle Ed Specialty Meats gift certificate to help elevate your grill game. In addition, I got a four-pack of Twins tickets. The winner, either Matt or Gino, right now with the High Noon Showdown. Gino is on list A, which means our buddy Matt is on list B. Let's go to war, fellas. It's the High Noon Showdown on a Friday.
That's two. That's far shooter.
Oh, you can count. Good for you.
And you can count on me waiting for you in the parking lot.
Doesn't have to be a fight in the parking lot. Although we'd love to see that, actually. It's time to duke it out in this week's edition of the High Noon Showdown.
As always on the High Noon Showdown, you got to bring your A game, but every now and then you might not actually need it. We'll wait and see. Gino's up to bat first, my friend. You're on list A. This one should be relatively easy. Give me the jersey number for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Ooh. Gino, what do you think?
Ooh. I just saw this because I've been watching highlights while at cardiac rehab.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, a jersey number for SGA.
Number two
is correct. Over to list B, line two. Matt, your jersey number ID today is Victor Wembanyama. What jersey number does he wear, Matt?
Oh, he's wearing number one.
Number one is correct. Ooh. Matt, your second question here. What college, we're talking Broncos later on in the show with Sayer Bettinger of Locked On Broncos, so it's Broncos the rest of the way here. Hope you guys are ready for that. Broncos country, let's ride. What college did Patrick Surtain II go to, Matt?
University of Alabama.
Alabama, roll tide. Over to Gino. You got an opponent today, Gino. He's on his game. What is the final college attended by quarterback of the Broncos, Bo Nix? What college was he drafted out of, technically?
University of Oregon.
Oregon. I'm glad you're not one of those weirdos that said Oregon, Gino. Question number three for you. This one's tough. I will give you maybe an additional second here, so six seconds instead of the usual five. Gino, what is the name of the quarterback that started the AFC Championship game for the Broncos last year? Bo Nix was hurt. Who started in his place?
Ooh. I should know this because I watched that game.
All right. And by the way, Matt, we can hear you. Do not say the answer, my friend. We can hear you whispering back there. Gino, I need an answer from you.
Jarrett Stidham.
Ding, ding, ding. Matt, an opportunity to push it into overtime. If you can tell me the answer to this question, Matt, the Broncos took this quarterback at number 11 overall in the 2006 NFL draft out of Vanderbilt. The Broncos took this quarterback at number 11 overall in the 2006 draft out of Vanderbilt. Who am I talking about?
You're talking about Jay Cutler.
Smoking Jay Cutler. You're right, Matt. Now, let's go to overtime, fellas. This is a good addition to the High Noon Showdown. Matt, you get the first crack of the bat. Best guess here. Emmitt Smith holds the NFL record for all-time career rushing yards with how many? Matt, give me your best guess.
Oh.
It's a big number.
It's like 18,500.
18,500. Gino, where are you going?
Ooh. 18,250.
Gino is just a little bit closer. Gino, job well done. High Noon Showdown concluding with Gino on top. You heard that before on the show. Matt, though, Tremendous job. Matt, for your efforts, my friend, I'll put a T-shirt, ESPN Sioux Falls T-shirt, at the front desk for you as the runner-up in an undefeated High Noon Showdown. Matt, a winner. Gino, the big winner today on a Friday edition of Overtime. That's the High Noon Showdown still to come on the show. Sayer Bettinger of Locked On Broncos will join us here in about 15 minutes, and we conclude the show with the latest and greatest news out of the National Football League, as well as the good, the bad, and the ugly, which we will spend some time on the passing, the tragic passing, sudden passing of Kyle Busch, who passed away yesterday at the age of 41, a NASCAR driver who has a tremendous resume, a NASCAR driver who was still active on the circuit and winning races at all three big levels. Kyle Busch passing away yesterday at the age of 41 years old. Tragedy striking the auto racing world, specifically the sport of NASCAR. That's still on the docket today on a Friday, May 22nd edition of Overtime. Let's hit your scorecard. Eastern Conference Finals Game 2 last night, a close game midway through. Knicks busted open with an 18-0 run in the third quarter. Knicks win 109-93. Alan Hahn of ESPN New York starting to feel pretty darn good about these Knicks.
They were a good team this year, really good team. They had a top three offense, but this is different. And every game that goes by, you keep seeing something else about them that just keeps giving off a vibe of there's some team of destiny thing happening here with this group. And now it's reached that point, two games away from the NBA Finals, where it just feels like, all right, this has to get there now, right? You don't want to see the story end soon. Two wins to go, it definitely feels like this is the closest they've been in a long time. It's obviously 26 years.
That's Alan Hahn on those Knicks, who took a 2-0 lead in the series. It's far from over. Nobody's won on the road yet. Cleveland thought they had in game one, but a more dominant game two victory for the Knicks last night, 109-93. Jay Williams says Jalen Brunson pretty darn close to some elite territory as a Knick.
If you're a Knick fan, you're saying, let's go to Cleveland and get one. Like, we get one, we come back, let's close it out at home, mm-hmm. right? And if you think about the way this is lining up, let's say Spurs and OKC go to six, they go to seven, and they beat the hell out of each mm-hmm. other. And then you get a scenario in which you're playing in the NBA championship, a team is tired, you have a fighter's chance, right? And I will go back to saying this, because I said it, you know, a couple weeks ago, it was the first time I ever said in my time here at ESPN, I believe the Knicks can win a championship. 2 years ago, Alan, you and I were on this show, and I said to you when they were playing against ball, I was like, hey man, it's trending in this direction. I know they have to win a championship to do so, but I not only think that Jalen Brunson has been the best player in this playoffs because he's 6'2", and the difficulty in doing that at that size and that frame compared to the 7'4 alien on the Spurs, but if he win a championship, I said to you, I think he has a chance to be the greatest Knick ever. It's not only the way it's his leadership, it's everything. 14 assists last night, 28 plus points the night before. He just has a variety of different ways of showing up, and his toughness speaks for itself.
Speaks for itself indeed. Josh Hart, the star of the show last night, though, as the clamps were put down on Brunson relatively. Hart had 26 points and 7 assists. Carl Anthony Towns, a double-double. Knicks win 109-93, a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals. Western Conference Finals, Game 3 tonight from San Antonio, 7:30 on NBC. Thunder at the Spurs, tied one apiece. San Antonio a razor-thin favorite tonight, 1.5 right now at DraftKings Sportsbook. Saturday, Knicks at Cavs, Game 3, 7 o'clock on ABC. Cleveland favored by 2.5 points. Brian Windhorst on the offseason puzzle. The Lakers and LeBron James, where do they need to go from here? Here's Windy on the latest.
He can do whatever. If he wants to wait until the day before the season starts, and there will be teams lined up to sign him. But if he wants to get a big dollar contract with the Los Angeles Lakers, he's going to have about a month. Because the Lakers have cap space, but he sits on their books at $58 million. That's the way the rules work in the NBA. And to give you a free agent, he sits on your books until you sign him for whatever his new number is, whether it's $58 million or it's $20 million or it's $10 million, or you renounce him and say, we're giving up your rights, goodbye. The Lakers cannot sit around and wait until mid-August to do something with that $58 million. And this is not like Aaron Rodgers, where you can sit for 6 months and then sign for $25 million. The NBA does not work like that. The Lakers have to make decisions. So really what I think, it's more incumbent on the Lakers to have a plan to bring to LeBron. If they want to resign him, I don't want to assume anything. They need to come to LeBron and say, LeBron, here's what we want to offer and why. It's not just about the actual dollars.
Of course.
It's about the respect that you want to show and to say, listen, if we want you to take a pay cut to whatever it's going to be,
why?
This is what we're going to do with the money.
LeBron James listed as the number one free agent on the open market entering the offseason. ESPN.com's got the article out right now. NBA free agent rankings for those keeping score at home. LeBron number one. Number two, Norman Powell in Miami. CJ McCollum three out of Atlanta. Kobe White in Charlotte number four. And Ayo Dosunmu of the Minnesota Timberwolves is an unrestricted free agent. He is the fifth ranked player on the open market entering the offseason, according to ESPN.com. Last night, sizable upset in the Stanley Cup playoff Eastern Conference final opener. Montreal 6, Carolina 2 from Raleigh. A massive win for the Canadiens. Marty St. Louis talking about his team and their success on the road this year.
I don't think it's one thing. You know, I feel like we're probably a little confidence from how the season went for us on the road. You know, so I think we believe that we, you know, And we know you don't get the matchup sometimes on the road, and you got to trust that the guys can just, like I always say, play the game that's in front of them, understanding who's on the other side, who's on the ice while that's happening. And we, as much as, you know, players, young players, they love to have these offensive touches, and I think sometimes it's just not what the game's giving you right now. You got to defend. And I think our defensive game has evolved and improved, you know, over the last few years. I think that's allowing us to be a good road team.
And that is Marty St. Louis, head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. Took a 6-2 lead last night, 6-2 win last night for a 1-0 lead in the series against the Canes, who suffered their first loss of the postseason. Tonight in the NHL, Golden Knights at Avs, game two from Denver, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Vegas leads that one 1-0, Colorado minus 205 on the puck line. And Saturday, Hurricanes favored a smidge more than they were in game one. Game two from Raleigh, Saturday night, 6 o'clock on TNT. The Canes a minus 220 favorite on the puck line. Sioux Falls Stampede looking for their fourth Clark Cup title. They're just one win away, best of five series. Stampede lead it 2-0 after sweeping the first two games here in Sioux Falls. Game three is tonight from Muskegon, Michigan, home of the Lumberjacks, a 6:10 start time central. Stay up to date, sfstampede.com. Major League Baseball, the Guardians staying hot. The Tigers staying not. 3-1, the final. Guardians win in Detroit. They're 30-22. Tigers slumping to a 20-31 mark. Other finals concerning area teams. St. Louis lost at home to Pittsburgh 6-2. And the Rockies lose again to the Diamondbacks in Arizona 2-1. Colorado now 19-32. Today and tonight, Twins will open a series at Fenway against the Red Sox. 6:10 tonight, 5:30 your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. And transitioning on the scorecard to the NASCAR circuit. The race this weekend will be at Charlotte, 5 o'clock Central Sunday. It'll be aired on Amazon Prime and HBO. And yesterday we got the news that Kyle Busch would not be racing because he had suffered a serious illness and was being hospitalized. And yesterday afternoon, we got the news that, tragically, Kyle Busch has passed away at the age of 41 years old. The NASCAR community coming together to celebrate his life and his legacy this weekend. A driver that was one of a kind, a villain to many on the race circuit, but a guy that's going to be missed absolutely. And a tremendous family man and father. Kyle Busch gone way too soon at 41 years old. Ryan McGee is live right now on Pat McAfee. But here's what McGee had to say this morning on ESPN Radio about the legacy of Kyle Busch.
It's winner. It's 63 wins in the Cup Series, in the big leagues, right, which is ninth all time. Just above him is Dale Earnhardt Sr. is 102 wins in the next tier, kind of the AAA baseball tier. That's first all time, and it's almost double what anyone else has. And then just a week ago, you know, he won this last win that he was talking about, which was his 69th win in the Truck Series. That's 234 wins across three national series. And what most folks don't know, unless you're just a hardcore race fan, is he also raced during the week. And he still raced in these super lower level short track races just to do it. His son Brexton is a short track racer. And so he'd go watch Brexton race his carts, and then he'd go jump in a car and race too. And so to me, it's just winter. As long as I've been doing this, which is 30 years, I was there for the beginning of his career, and unfortunately I was there for the end. And to me, it's just winter. And that's the goal of every race car driver, is to have as more trophies than anyone else. And that's exactly what he did.
Kyle Busch, absolutely a winner. Gone way too soon at the age of 41. Marty Smith, the other half of Marty and McGee on ESPN Radio. What this loss is like for the racing community.
I'm still trying to be able to properly articulate it, and I think Denny Hamlin did it very well last night on social media. Denny was Kyle's teammate at Joe Gibbs Racing for many years. And he said, we've lost our Kobe Bryant. And I think that for fans of your show probably does a good job of just trying to say well the gravity of this.
Kyle Busch, a recent NASCAR champion, not too far long ago, as he won the most recent of his many titles in 2019 on the top level of the NASCAR circuit. We'll spend a lot of time on that towards the end of the show. Kyle Busch, notable NASCAR racer, active on many circuits of racing, gone way too soon at the age of 41 yesterday afternoon. Over to the world of college football, Chris Canty pushing back on a lot of critiques about a 2014 playoff, saying, I'm excited about the entertainment value of the regular season, even if they move to 24.
We have the potential to get an upset that we didn't expect to be on the board. I mean, you could say that there aren't 68 teams that can win the national championship in college basketball. It doesn't stop March Madness from being fun. So I think that there's an argument to be made that expanding the playoffs is going to be a little more entertaining. And here's the thing. Everybody talks about how it dilutes the regular season, and maybe it does to some degree, but I think it also creates a lot of runway for these teams to prepare to do what it takes in order to develop players so they can be at their best once we get to playoff-style football. In a lot of ways that NFL coaches use the regular season, I think it sets up for the potential for that in college football.
You know, it's not the same sport, so the compliment or the comparison between the NCAA tournament and this 24-team idea, 16-team idea, 12-team experiment, 4-team experiment. It's not apples to apples because the NFL and college football, rather, has way fewer games. They mean a lot more inherently than the 30 games in the regular season of college basketball. And I've never heard a complaint from anybody about the NCAA tournament devaluing the college basketball season, because last time I checked, you can go on a run as a 5-seed, 6-seed, 7-seed, 16-seed, and make some noise, and everybody loves it. We love that about the college basketball tournament, and it's getting bigger because of those opportunities of the past. Now, football's not the same. I'm for more thoughtful expansion, but I've said over and over again this offseason, as this appears like a formality, the reason why I'm not adamantly slamming my fist saying, don't expand this thing like I was with the NCAA basketball tournament. That didn't need to get expanded. It was perfect. Now, college football's playoff system at the top level is not perfect. It's far from it. But I just worry about the execution here. That's the big issue for me, is the big boys in the sandbox, the SEC and the Big Ten. Are they going to carve out 8 guaranteed spots apiece, or are they carving out 6 guaranteed spots apiece? I just hope we figure out something that is fair. I'm fine for conferences to have floors, like a conference winner guaranteed to get in, conference runner-up guaranteed to get in. I think that should be the case for just about every conference, except for the littlest of little guys. I mean, if there's a 7-win MAC school that finishes second, they should not get in. But a 10-win, 11-win MAC school that wins should be in. Absolutely. Every single year, regardless of ranking. That's just my two cents. 24 teams, and you're not going to include a conference winner. I think that every conference winner should get in. But we'll see exactly how it's executed moving forward. Not if, but when at this stage it becomes 24 teams, because every sign is pointing in that direction. Lastly on the scorecard, D1 softball, the Lincoln Super Regional barely got off the ground last night. Rain delay, so it'll get underway today, coming up 4 o'clock this afternoon for the resumption of Game 1. Game 2 Saturday at 4 between Nebraska and Oklahoma State. D1 Baseball Summit League Tournament, the Jacks are hot. Back-to-back wins, knocking down Northern Colorado, knocking down Oral Roberts. Those two programs will play today in an elimination game at 3 o'clock. Jackrabbits are playing for the title. They'll have 2 at-bats at the title, if you will, if they need them. Game 1 Saturday will be 1 o'clock against the winner of ORU and UNC. And D2 Baseball, Augustana lost yesterday in the opener to Central Missouri. It's double elimination, so the back's against the wall for the Vikings this afternoon at 3, Saturday at 1 o'clock, if necessary, Game 3 of the series. Hopefully necessary Game 3. GoAuggie.com/live, the place to go there. We will take a break. When we come back, we're going to welcome in a first-time guest to the show, a Sioux Falls native who covers the Denver Broncos. Sayer Bettinger will join us to talk about Broncos country. Let's ride. The quarterback position, the running back logjam, holes on the roster, draft recap, and the Broncos schedule for 2026. Can't miss conversation centered around those Denver Broncos coming up next on a Friday edition of Overtime.
Don't miss a moment of local college and pro sports action. Stay connected and download the app for Overtime on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO.
Right back with you. It's the middle of hour number two on a Friday edition of Overtime. Congratulations to Gino, our winner of the High Noon Showdown. Let's talk Broncos now. One of the hosts of the Locked On Broncos podcast. You can find on the Locked On Network, Locked On Broncos, simple search on YouTube, is Sioux Falls native Sayre Bettinger, who joins us now on the ESPN hotline. A return home of sorts, Sayre. Welcome into the show, my friend. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. Always fun to talk Broncos football and a crazy small world connection. So really grateful you guys are having me on.
And certainly we're fired up to have you, man, talking about Broncos country. Let's ride. Let's ride into this middle of this offseason for the Broncos. The NFL draft came and went pretty quick. Denver, of course, sold their first round pick for the rights to Jaylen Waddle, who should upgrade their offense. What did you think? What did you like about the Broncos draft this year?
I really love the balance overall. I think they went after they lost John Franklin Myers in free agency, which that name, he's not selling a ton of jerseys, but he's got a lot of production. Mm-hmm. 7.5 sacks last season. So they spent their top pick on Tyler Onyedum. I thought that was a great investment to just kind of keep that and set a franchise record with sacks 2 years in a row. So you want to replenish that D line. Really loved that move. And then they go get Jonah Coleman, who everybody's talking about with their top pick on day three. He's going to upgrade the running back room. Cage Casey, they feel like could be a future starter at left guard. And then round five, you trade up for Justin Jolie, the tight end out of NC State, big time playmaker. Probably got him a round or two later than they should have. And kind of just felt like they really rounded out day three with some good picks in the seventh round there, getting Miles Scott, a really underrated safety out of Illinois. He's a fun player to kind of study and watch as a former receiver. Dallin Bentley was a name that a lot of folks in Broncos country had their eyes on because they kind of love the Utah guys. They've had three straight off seasons going after a Utah tight end. So Bentley was already on the radar. And then Red Murdoch with the Mr. Irrelevant pick kind of addressed one of their biggest needs, but another guy who just felt like they got him a round or two, or at least, you know, that later than they should have. So felt like a lot of great value, not to use a Walmart pun with the Broncos specifically, but it felt like a great value draft and just nice and balanced.
Denver Broncos, a very nice year last year. Of course, got the big win over Buffalo in the postseason, fell with Jarrett Stidham at quarterback in the AFC title game to the New England Patriots. Sayre Bettinger is our guest, host of the Locked On Broncos podcast. You can find it wherever you get your simple search on YouTube, Locked On Broncos. Sayre, you just did a nice job going through pick by pick. Give me your one pick. Probably, I would guess, Jonah Coleman, but I'll let you wax poetic about whoever you think it is. Which one of these guys is going to have the nicest, most impactful rookie year in Denver?
I think it is going to be Jonah Coleman, honestly. I mean, it could be Justin Jolie, the tight end, but with Evan Engram and Adam Trautman ahead of him, I think even though there are three backs that, you know, the Broncos, they have J.K. Dobbins, they brought him back. They have R.J. Harvey, who led the team in touchdowns last year. Jonah Coleman is kind of the perfect combination of both of those guys. And whereas last year they used Tyler Bidet on a lot of snaps. Tyler Bidet was out there for the 2-minute offense. He was out there in their, you know, hurry up offense. He was out there for third downs. But the problem was, is that when Bidet was on the field, they were kind of telegraphing that they're throwing the ball. So as much as he, you know, can excel in pass protection, he wasn't necessarily that somebody they're handing the ball off to. Jonah Coleman is somebody who, number one in this draft class in yards after contact, number one in this draft class in terms of explosives out of the backfield, in terms of the passing game, and one of the best graded pass blocking running backs in the class. And so you're getting a true three down player who doesn't telegraph your intentions when he's on the field. So a lot of folks are wondering, like, how high up the depth chart can he rise? And if an injury occurs or something, how quickly can he sort of Wally Pipp that situation and come in and become the featured back? So there's a lot of excitement over Jonah Coleman, and I think it's justified. He's maybe not the most spectacular in terms of like height, weight, speed, those types of things, but his skill set is kind of exactly what the Broncos need in terms of both a complementary piece now and potentially a future starter down the road.
Sayer Bettinger is our guest, talking Broncos, host of the Locked On Broncos podcast. Sayer, as far as the roster goes, every roster has holes on it. What is the one area of concern for the Denver Broncos right now?
I think on offense, it's got to be the tight end position. I mean, one of the weakest in terms of passing game production out of the tight ends. Didn't get what they were hoping for out of Evan Engram last year, and frankly, that was their own fault. They didn't even use Evan on 50% of the snaps, so just got to figure out a way to better utilize him. And who better to do that than Davis Webb, who's now going to be calling the plays for the Broncos offense. And Davis was a teammate of Evan Ingram's back when they were both together on the New York Giants. And so he was actually a big reason Ingram came to Denver in the first place. So it's kind of like, okay, we're rehashing the excitement that we all had about bringing Evan Engram in the first place, because it wasn't good last year. It just wasn't. He wasn't on the field. He wasn't getting targeted. There was no consistent involvement. Now you kind of feel like Davis Webb's going to be able to get him involved and kind of fix that primary weakness on the offense, which was involvement from the tight end. It was just too sporadic. So that's the one real area of the roster that I think you could say, hey, they kind of stuck with status quo at the top of the depth chart, a couple of dart throws on day three of the draft that could be something, but you're still leaning heavily on the players that you had last year when the production wasn't good. And so that's going to be the one area of the team that this offseason you're kind of renewing hope and optimism for, but also approaching with a bit of skepticism as well.
Sayer Bettinger is our guest, one half of the Locked On Broncos podcast. Find it wherever you get yours. You can follow Sayer Bettinger. Sayer Bettinger on Twitter, also tagged in today's show log. Let's talk about the backfield. I'm frustrated because there's so many different dudes that I think are good backs on the Broncos. Of course, you mentioned Bidet, Jaleel McLaughlin recently. RJ Harvey, many thought and anointed him as the future. And then they go and draft Jonah Coleman, and they re-sign J.K. Dobbins. How do you discern the pecking order here, and is there any bet for a workhorse, or is it just going to be a by-committee deal in Denver?
It's going to be by-committee, but the hope is that J.K. Dobbins can be the featured back. And I say hope because, you know, J.K. Dobbins has never played a full NFL season, and he takes issue with the label of being injury-prone. He looks at it more as he's had a number of freak injuries, whereas injury-prone players are guys who are dealing with hamstrings or, you know, soft tissue things. That's not really what he deals with. He just kind of got bad luck. And so the Broncos invested in him, honestly. I mean, it wasn't one of the biggest contracts given out, but a two-year deal worth up to $20 million, $8 million in guarantees. They're putting faith behind J.K. Dobbins to be the guy that he was prior to injury, which was top five in pretty much every category: yards per carry, yards after contact. I mean, he's creating offense where nobody else could do that. And that's why I think there's going to be a committee, because they want to keep him fresh. They also, I think when you talk about RJ Harvey and you think Sean Payton, think Alvin Kamara type of role. Alvin Kamara, I think up to this point, still doesn't even have a 1,000-yard rushing season, but he makes an impact as a receiver. And that's where RJ Harvey, they envision him making his biggest impact, is he's not probably going to carry the ball 20 times a game, but he might touch it 20 times a game, and they're going to throw him the ball a lot. And so I think it is going to be those two guys, with Jonah Coleman kind of sprinkling in. Those other two guys, McLaughlin and Bidet, just frankly, I mean, they got what a golden opportunity late last season. When J.K. Dobbins goes down in week 10, you have a chance to really seize a role and make sure that the team builds around you going forward. But it was Bo Nix leading the team in rushing against Buffalo, and it wasn't that many yards. So the bar was already low to clear, and yet those two guys couldn't capitalize with an entire half of a season. So to me, those two guys are kind of on the outside looking in of the roster entirely, and having to work their way back into the circle of trust with Sean Payton after the way things finished last year and now the arrival of Jonah Coleman.
Wrapping up the conversation with Sayer Bettinger of the Locked On Broncos podcast. Anytime you need Broncos news, look no further than Locked On Broncos. Sayer, lastly, man, the schedule is out. Give me your initial diagnosis of the slate for the Broncos in 2026, and give me a number of wins this fall for Denver.
I love the schedule. I'm saying 12 wins. You know, the George Payton, the general manager of the team, came out and said, hey, we might be a better team this year, but we might not win as many games. And the reality is, I mean, in a 17-game season, you win 14 games last year and you win 11 one-score games. The reality is that the ball is not going to bounce your way every single week. But I do think the Broncos have created a new sort of floor with their talent level. And the schedule is hard, but let's just be honest about it. Like, every NFL schedule is hard. Like, every NFL team plays a difficult schedule. And the way that I think about it is like this. Like, the Broncos, yes, they're playing a first-place schedule based on last season. So they get to play, for instance, on Black Friday, they get to play the Pittsburgh Steelers. But would you rather play the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, or would you rather play the Bengals with a healthy Joe Burrow or the Ravens with a healthy Lamar Jackson? Those teams count as non-playoff teams on other teams' schedules, whereas the Steelers count as a playoff team on Denver's. So I always wipe the slate clean. I look at what quarterbacks are they playing, what defenses are they playing, how many cold weather games, how many primetime games. So I love the schedule. I don't think anybody's got a harder first six games than Denver, probably six legitimate, viable Super Bowl contenders within that mix. And so it's going to be tough, but I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly. I mean, that's the type of schedule that you have to go up against in order to be battle tested and ready for the postseason. And I think that'll benefit the Broncos. They start tough, they finish tough, but there's opportunities in there for them to kind of prove their championship medal, which I think is really outstanding in terms of just what they're facing going up against the NFC West, going up against obviously the AFC West is going to be tough. So they've got a tough schedule, but who in the NFL doesn't?
That's the latest on the Denver Broncos. Well said, Sayre Bettinger, a Sioux Falls native, covering the Broncos with the Locked On Broncos podcast. We'll have to do it again soon, my friend. Job well done. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. That's Sayre Bettinger with the Locked On Broncos podcast. You can find that wherever you get yours. He's also tagged in today's show log. We take a break. When we come back, the latest NFL news dump, also the good, the bad, the ugly. We'll spend some time digesting the tragedy shaking up the sports world, specifically auto racing. Kyle Busch gone way too soon as of yesterday afternoon at the age of just 41 years old. We dive into that and more. Good, the bad, the ugly. NFL talk next as we say so long to the day and the week of overtime after this.
It's so convenient. Sports on the go. Download the free app now. This is ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, set to round out and wrap up the day and the week of the show. A reminder, some well-earned PTO on the way for yours truly. So next week, we are off. I hope everyone has a wonderful Memorial Day holiday and extended time with the family and friends. And certainly do not forget about the veterans in our community and in our great families as well. Happy Memorial Day. Next week, we are off. We will return the following Monday with your overtime fix after what will be, I'm sure, a very entertaining stretch of the NHL, NBA postseason, and I'm sure some other news from the NFL. I would think likely by the next time we talk, Deebo Samuel, Tyreek Hill, somebody like that, Stephon Diggs might have a new home. Already dreaming about that Monday edition of Overtime a couple weeks away. Let's dive into the NFL news of the day. A noticeably slimmer Cam Ward took the field for the Titans' first OTA practice that was open to the media yesterday. The quarterback said he's lost about 10 pounds after weighing in at 219 last year. Ward saying, I think it'll help me with durability. Just being faster, getting up in the pocket, trying to play my speed. I watch my diet more, continue to do more cardio, just work on my body just now here. And when I'm away from the building, Ward said getting leaner was one of many goals for the offseason. The dietary changes mostly involved monitoring his intake of calories, protein, and carbs for the second-year quarterback, who also focused on strengthening the right shoulder he injured on the opening drive of the season finale back in January. Cam Ward, a decent rookie season on a dreadful team in Nashville. Got a coach in Robert Saleh, an offensive-minded coach, assistant in Brian Daboll. I'm relatively bullish on the Titans. Are they a playoff team? Heck no, they're not. But I do like them this year to show some growth and maturity. And Cam Ward, certainly an investable asset at this stage of his career. Pro Football Talk on that news. Well, things continue to get a little bit more sketchy and just a little bit worse surrounding the New York Giants and wide receiver Malik Nabers. They do not know when the star receiver will be back from what Coach John Harbaugh said Thursday was, quote, not a simple knee injury. Nabers tore the ACL in his right knee all the way back in September. Based on recovery timelines nowadays, he should be more than ready. Again, every situation's different, but based on most recovery timelines, he should be more than ready to be back for week one. But he underwent the original surgery, which included a full meniscus repair. Several weeks later, a second surgery was required to remove scar tissue that was causing stiffness in the joint. It was the Giants hopeful, but uncertain he'll return for week one. They open their season in a Sunday Night Football matchup against the Dallas Cowboys at MetLife. Harbaugh saying yesterday he's in the middle of it. Such a hard thing. It's an ACL and whatever else he had in that knee. Not a simple knee injury, you know? So he's got the slog of it, the grind of it, I would say. He's fighting through it, and he's here every day working hard at it. But not a great update. I'm Malik Nabers. They do not know exactly when he will be back. The Detroit Lions have signed former Iowa All-American linebacker Jack Campbell to a four-year contract extension, putting him under contract with the franchise through 2030, according to a team announcement yesterday afternoon. The deal is worth $81 million, $51.5 million guaranteed. According to Ian Rappaport of NFL Network, it comes after the Lions declined to exercise the fifth-year option for this coming or 2027 season. The option would have been worth an estimated $22 million. Campbell, 25 years old, enjoyed a breakout year, earning first-team All-Pro honors in addition to his first Pro Bowl selection. Anybody that watches Hawkeye football or rival Big Ten football knows that name, Jack Campbell, off to a good start in his NFL career. Four-year contract extension and the highest-paid off-ball, old-school, thumper middle linebacker in the National Football League right now. Reigning NFL MVP Matthew Stafford and the Rams reached agreement yesterday on a one-year, $55 million contract extension. The deal for the star quarterback can rise to as much as $60 million, and Stafford now tied to L.A. through the 2027 season with $105 million remaining on his deal. Some people are saying, why the heck would you do that? You just drafted Ty Simpson. You guys are buffoons. I love this move. And I mean, hold down the shift key, L-O-V-E. All caps love this move, because if you're going to go ahead and do the Packer model, you may as well lean all the way in. Make it a two-year process for Ty Simpson to learn behind a future Hall of Famer and a good guy who right now is still, last time I checked, pretty darn good in Matthew Stafford. The reason the Rams are Super Bowl contenders, the reason the Rams are Super Bowl favorites, is because of number 9 out in Los Angeles and Matthew Stafford. He has a lot of weight and gravitas in the organization, and you reward him as such. You pay him as such. They tie him up for 2 years now, and then you have your plan in place. Ty Simpson's going to sit and learn, play in the preseason, probably be a disaster and a train wreck this year in the preseason. Mop up duty in the regular season. Learn how to be a pro. Learn how to take care of your body. Learn how to read an NFL defense and catch up to the speed of the game. Gain some mental reps, physical reps. Then next year will be that proving ground of, okay, show us what you got now with a whole year behind you. And then you dive into the decision of, okay, Matthew, do you still want to play? We got to make this and weigh this with where we view Ty Simpson at right now. We'll see. But I really like this move for the Rams to solidify Matthew Stafford's future and tie him to the team through 2027, should he still want to play next year. Bad news for the New York Giants. Defensive lineman Roy Robertson-Harris tore his Achilles yesterday at an OTA workout and is expected to miss the entire season ahead. That is very tough news. And this news out of New York, also centered around the Giants, has me scratching my head. The Giants are set to sign general manager Joe Shane to a multi-year contract extension, pairing him with head coach John Harbaugh for years to come. Shane, at age 47, joined the Giants back in 2022, along with coach Brian Daboll. Shane's contract was set to expire after this upcoming season, though Daboll was fired in October. The Giants entrusted Shane with driving the coaching search that ultimately produced Harbaugh. The two then worked together through the free agency and the draft. But for me, this is a weird maneuver. What has Joe Shane done this offseason, save for assisting in bringing John Harbaugh in, which may have been a no-doubter John Mara proclamation, go get this coach, tell me about the cost and the contract later. But Joe Shane was on shaky turf, thin ice, if you will, heading into this offseason, this draft. He's in a noticeable reduced role because John Harbaugh is one of the coaches who has earned the ability to throw around some front office weight as a coach. I'm going to have a heavy voice in this personnel department, like it or not. And Shane is taking a back seat there. But now, in an offseason in which I would say you almost parted ways with Joe Shane, you're going to give him a contract extension before the season even begins? Don't get it. Don't get it. No indictment on Shane the person, Shane the performance, but this offseason was a question mark of whether he would stick around. It was probably an unpopular decision to begin with to keep him around. And now you extend him before there's any proof in the pudding this year in regards to the direction, the personnel maneuvers. Don't really understand it, but the Giants certainly going to make their own way. The Chicago Bears are not going to be the Chicago Bears moving forward. They reiterated Thursday that they plan to leave the city as they continue to look at building a stadium in either suburban Illinois or beautiful, scenic, Hammond, Indiana. Chicago Bears have exhausted every opportunity to stay in Chicago, which was our initial goal. The team said in a statement, there is not a viable site in the city. As a result, the only sites under consideration are in Arlington Heights, northern suburb, or Hammond, Indiana, southeast, just over the border in the Hoosier State. The statement, which appears again to close the door on the team staying in Chicago, comes after team president Kevin Warren said last month at the NFL annual league meeting in Arizona that the Bears were hoping to choose a new site for an enclosed stadium in Illinois or Indiana late this spring or early in the summer, which if you look at your calendar, that is right about now. Hammond or Arlington Heights, Chicago Bears, no more. They'll keep the name, that's fine, but they're not going to play in Chicago any longer, which for me and all the feelings of purity around the Bears and teams that are from a city, playing in that city, breaks me up just a little bit because I actually like Soldier Field, the venue, the footprint, the spaceship part, the recent remodel, yuck, the team, ugh. But the area, city of Chicago, waterfront, beautiful. Soldier Field site, going to be no longer. Bears no longer playing in Chicago in the near future. Time now to wrap up the show. The good, the bad, the ugly, now on Overtime.
Many days there are those who can be called a problem child. You know the ones. They have a tendency to display an ugly side. They have their whiny moments. Some display an outright bad side of themselves. And then there are those who stand out in a good way. Well, here they are. The good, the bad, and the ugly.
The good, the bad, and the ugly brought to you by Lewis Drug. Right now, you can up your grill game. Literally, get your hands on a Charbroil 5-burner grill this week at Lewis for just $249.97. That grill typically up north of $500. Head on out. Lewis Drug, again, a Charbroil 5-burner grill on sale, $250 this week at your local Lewis Drug. The lower bowl of the Athletics' $2 billion dome stadium on the Vegas Strip is taking shape. And officials said the project remains on schedule to open before the 2028 season. Club and contractor officials presented their update on the 33,000-person capacity ballpark on Thursday at the Las Vegas Stadium Authority meeting. The lower suite level is progressing substantially. We're starting to see a lot of rooms taking shape, and a lot of that environment has started to become a component of the stadium. All signs ahead, chugging ahead, Las Vegas A's baseball before we know it. Tigers ace Tarek Skubal threw another bullpen session yesterday, his third since his rehab program from elbow surgery began. The two-time AL Cy Young Award winner underwent a non-invasive procedure on his left pitching elbow May 6th to remove a loose body. He threw his latest bullpen session prior to Detroit's home game against Cleveland. Manager A.J. Hinch called it a quote-unquote great step. That is good news. From bagging groceries at Hy-Vee to the Hall of Fame at UNI, almost a decade after he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Kurt Warner is finally entering the UNI Hall of Fame in Cedar Falls. Warner, who is among eight former UNI athletes announced as 2026 inductees Thursday, won a Super Bowl with the Rams, played in two others during an improbable 12-year NFL career that ended after the 2009 season. The Burlington, Iowa native was a member of four straight conference championship teams at UNI and was the Panthers' starting quarterback as a senior in 1993. Went to training camp with the Packers, was cut, stocked shelves at a Cedar Falls grocery store, and was an Arena Football League star 3 years in Des Moines with the Iowa Barnstormers. Tremendous career and story. Kurt Warner, now a Hall of Famer to be at UNI. Lastly here, the ugly news, the obvious news. Kyle Busch, a two-time Cup Series champion who won more races across the sport's three national series than any driver in history, passed away yesterday at the age of 41. The Busch family, Richard Childress Racing and NASCAR, issued a joint statement saying that Busch passed away after being hospitalized earlier in the day as the result of a severe illness 3 days before he was set to compete at the Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte. No cause of death was given at this time. I'm sure details down the line, possibly out at ESPN.com or otherwise. Busch was testing in the Chevrolet Racing Simulator in Concord, North Carolina on Wednesday when he became unresponsive and was transported to a hospital in nearby Charlotte. Several people familiar with the situation told the AP on condition of anonymity because details had not been disclosed by Busch's team or family. Kyle Busch, a phenomenal talent. Like him, love him, despise him on the racetrack. He was a racer. An absolute stud out there at every level. Two-time NASCAR Cup Series champion, ranks ninth on the all-time wins list, 234 combined wins in NASCAR's top three series, and holds the wins record in the O'Reilly Auto Parts Series and the Craftsman Truck Series, and is among the most accomplished drivers currently in the NASCAR circuit. This is beyond shocking, beyond tragic, and like I said off the lead-up today, NASCAR is such a unique sport that you could have 40 drivers out there. It used to be 43, but generally speaking on Sundays now, it's around 40 drivers on a track. You can have guys out there, and you can have guys that are absurdly aggressive, absurdly naive, guys that are steady Eddie, fan favorites. Kyle Busch was not a fan favorite. He was not in the business of making friends on the track. There were very few people that were beating their chest saying, Kyle Busch is my absolute positive favorite driver. But he filled his role, and by all accounts, a tremendous family man and a guy who's got a tremendous legacy in the world of NASCAR, with his brother being very accomplished, Kurt Busch. Kyle Busch comes in and upsets the apple cart even further. Not a popular driver's driver, not a guy that anybody wanted to buddy up with, but one hell of a race car driver and a hell of a man by most mentions. Dale Earnhardt Jr. weighing in, anybody at the pulse of NASCAR weighing in today and yesterday on this passing, tragic. 41 years old. Losing a player, a driver, an athlete, a figure of that magnitude during a career, this is about as tragic as we can think of in the sports world recent memory. Kobe, obviously, post-career, equally as tragic, equally as surprising and devastating for the basketball community. But this is a massive loss for NASCAR and a not only tremendous accomplished racer, but a guy that will live in the Hall of Fame and live in the memories of NASCAR and race fans for a very long time. Absolute tragedy yesterday and an obvious candidate for the ugly in today's edition of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. More on that, I'm sure, down the line. But rest in peace to Kyle Busch and thoughts and prayers with his family, extended family, son, and so much more. Kyle Busch passing away yesterday at the age of 41. That is the show. That is the week. We are off next week, so we will talk to you a week from Monday. Everybody have a great holiday weekend. Happy, safe, healthy. Enjoy it with the families. Thank a veteran. Get started the summer the right way. We'll be back a week from Monday to break down everything you may have missed and everything ahead in the sports world. Thanks for being a part of the show as always. Thanks for listening. Check it in. We'll talk to you a week from Monday when the next edition of Overtime rolls around right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.